Hey, welcome to Guitar Knobs, the guitars, gear, noise, and nonsense podcast, hosted today by
these knobs.
Tony Dudzik, Pick Guardian.
Jared Brandon.
Brandon Wong Pickups.
Zach Oswald.
And hey, this is me, Todd Novak. Pleased to have you with us. We are glad you are here. Let's talk about some guitars with this guy on the line.
Hey, it's Rick Matthews of Matthews Effects.
It is indeed Rick Matthews of Matthews Effects. And so we're going to talk about more than guitars. We're going to talk about a lot about pedals, I think. I'm assuming. I've heard you make some, so.
Yeah, I try. I glue some stuff together.
Yeah.
Nice.
All righty. We have a few things to take care of. Now, Tony, we're not going to do our normal thing this week.
Oh.
I know. He loves doing it. I'm just going to tell everybody, go to patreon.com/ the guitar knobs if you want to support the podcast. Now you can shake the paper. Okay, thanks.
You get your name right on the thing. Yeah. If you
see how he is.
I'm doing this for other purposes because
today
I want to take just a little bit of time to tell you about something that we are part of right now. We have a headphone sponsor that I'm just absolutely thrilled about. I reached out to Grado Headphones in Brooklyn, handmade by a family in Brooklyn. They've been doing it for years and years and years in the same little building, and they've got a great story, and I reached out to him and I said, I appreciated your story. I learned about it about 2 years ago, and as we were trying to build the podcast up, I felt like they would be a great partner to have. And so we started a conversation, and we are now wearing
Grado
sets of Grado Prestige Series Model SR80E headphones.
Hey, can I say something?
Yeah.
Todd,
yes.
You have never sounded better than through these Grado headphones.
Really?
Never. I mean, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
They're pretty lightweight, too. It doesn't feel like you have big, heavy bowling balls on each side of your head. They're really nice.
Yeah. They're on here. They've got a really unique way of delivering the sound. I was just telling Jared, we were discussing this right before the show, and you know, with cans, you know, typical cans, you put them on and it sounds like you have two sound rooms on your head. If you're wearing in-ear, it's sort of like a pipeline directly into your eardrums, both of which have their upsides. And, you know, I've got sets of different kinds. When we're talking, we're having a conversation, that can actually be a little weird. It feels a little bit removed because we're all sitting here. These let you actually hear the ambient noise around you. And if you're talking, then whatever noise is coming through the headphones just accentuates that. But when you put the music on, it takes over. And it takes over in this really unique sort of omnidirectional way. The first time I put them on and plugged in, I played some music. I think I plugged in Queens of the Stone Age, and I was just like really, really impressed because I had not actually listened to these before. I believed in who this company is, what they represent, what their story is, and that's where I aligned on them, having not even heard the product. And when I put it on, I was genuinely, like, really, really impressed. Anyways, our podcast moving forward, we are listening on our new Grado headphones, and we want to just thank that company so much for doing that for us. We really, really appreciate it, and I totally support what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Amen.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's some business for us. And we've got a whole bunch of guitar stuff to talk about. I have a feeling that we have some stories to share about what's going on this week. Gentlemen, shall we do this?
We can do this.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Rick, let's hear from you. The people are dying. I can hear them. They're scratching at the walls, wanting to hear you.
I thought that was the people wondering how they could help support us.
Stop it. Okay.
Oh, man. Where to start? You know, personally, I would just like to throw it out there that I picked up a 60s Supro Duotone recently, and wow, it's been blowing my mind how awesome that guitar is.
Wow.
So that's cool. Super. Yeah.
What's it look like? So tell us about it.
That's the two pickup one, right? That's the
Yeah, it's the two pickup version. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they're just crazy interesting because, you know, they're hollow, right? They're fully hollow and made from acrylic or plexiglass or something like that.
Oh, okay. So it's one of the molded body ones.
It's like an airline guitar.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got a rust or a scratchy pot on it, and I'm so nervous to take that thing apart just because it literally is two halves.
Yep.
Bolted together.
And you have to be very careful with the there's like a rubber.
Yeah, gasket.
Gasket that goes around between the two halves.
What would you use to clean something like that out, Tony? Just regular electrical contact cleaner?
Yeah, you might consider. I think Stu Max still sells a thing that goes on top of the pot. So you can do it from the top side of the guitar. And if you shoot some deoxid or whatever, and it goes from the top side and kind of forces it in, that way you don't even have to take it apart. Nice. I'd try that first.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've got some deoxid laying around there somewhere.
Jared.
All right. So if you guys noticed out there, you knobs, I have been gone a few episodes.
What? Here, pull the...
All right, let me... How's this? So no,
just pull, move the mic, man. It's like a desktop mic.
I know. I'm ridiculous.
He just likes the contortion.
So my wife and I and some friends of ours, we went to Hawaii and was planning on taking a vacation away from guitars and everything and just leave everything back in the mainland. And but that didn't last long because, you know, we would go, you have to say mainland. You can't say back in the States.
Okay.
So anyway, because Hawaii is a state,
right?
Believe me, I've heard that plenty of times over there. So it didn't take long, and I saw a little shop, and it said guitar shop. But you walk in, and what do you see?
Ukulele.
99.9% ukuleles.
Or as they say, ukulele.
Right. But there was this really awesome, like, handmade or boutique-made steel guitar that I saw on a case. It was really, really cool. I think I may have posted a picture of it, but I'll repost it. But that was probably one of the coolest things guitar-wise that I saw while I was out there. And it was – I'd never seen, like, a boutique, handcrafted quality steel guitar like that in my life. It was really something else. It really took my eye.
So the bigger question is, did you bring us each an ukulele back?
No. Sorry.
Yeah. I got three of them in my eye. I do not.
Right.
If I hear another ukulele, I swear I will smash something near me.
I also wanted to point out that the entertainment when I was out there, like, it was all superb. The culture there was amazing, and the way those musicians sing is just amazing. They all have a, you know, that soft, deep tone. They were all great at playing guitar and their instruments. It was a really good time, and I really appreciated the musical culture they had going on out there. So that's basically been, you know, my last few things, my last few weeks of guitar.
How was the plane flight?
It was very, very long, but I was in a comfort class, not first class, but a comfort class, so it gave me a little more leg room. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't bad at all. I mean, I cannot sleep on a plane, but I have
they
to
they couldn't
say,
put you in the back because they would just be doing a wheelie the
right,
whole way there.
Right, right. We would have went off to space.
Well, all I can say is you were greatly missed. I mean, the switchboard was lighting up with people worried that you were not coming back. Literally. I mean, we had how many? 30, 40 calls?
Right.
There's one right now.
Yeah, there's one. Somebody's calling. Where's Jared?
No, your phone's literally calling.
Nah, it's just buzzing.
Oh, okay. Anyways, okay, good. Well, glad you're back.
Yeah, it's great to be back. I love this stuff.
Yeah, we like having you back.
Yeah.
Yay.
Zach.
I guess the most interesting thing I picked up recently.
So wait, hold on. Okay, so Zach, Jared.
Oh, I'm sorry. Zach Oswald is a good friend of mine. He helps me out in the shop. He also has a really big Facebook group of, 11,000 members, a guitar group called Epiphone Les Paul Fans.
Epiphone Guitar Fans.
So he knows a thing or two about guitars, and I thought I'd bring him here and give him a shot on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's good to have you.
I've been a listener for a while now. It's cool to actually be here.
Good.
Does it live up to all of your expectations?
And then some.
Yeah. So what's up with that Martin?
Yeah, what's going on in your guitar world this week?
Yeah, so the most interesting thing is I've been looking for like a Martin D28 or D35 for a long time, probably over a year now. And a couple weeks ago, I stumbled across a deal I just couldn't pass up on an old 76 D35.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of the nicest old acoustic guitar sounds, you know, big and boomy and loud.
I mean, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Come on. It's first time here.
Go on.
But yeah, it's just had everything I was looking for. It was just really nice. I wanted an old one. I didn't want a new one. I didn't want to settle for something like that. And I mean, they're nice guitars, but I just wanted that old wood, you know?
Yeah. Did it have any kind of history to it that they could tell you about, or?
Nothing that I know of. I mean, it's not that old, though.
Yeah.
A lot of those old ones from that era, they need, like, neck resets on a regular.
Well, I mean, that's just any old acoustic, especially right. A 12-string.
Yeah, because they have truss rods, but they're not adjustable, so the strings pull on it and eventually got to reset the neck. But thankfully, mine had already had that done to it, so I didn't have to worry about it.
Okay. That's cool. That's always a bonus when somebody's done the work before you get it.
Yeah, that's right. Not a cheap job.
No.
Were there always truss rods in those?
T-bars.
Okay.
So a T-bar is basically a non-adjustable truss rod. So it's a T-shaped piece of steel that runs, and it's supposed to
is
help
offset. Is it T on both sides or just the one?
It's T-shaped.
Yeah, but I mean, is there a T at the top and a T at the bottom?
No, that would be an I.
That would be an I. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, or Tony. Number one?
Yeah.
Or, in Todd's world.
Yes. All right. I can see how this is going to go today. Yeah. I had some crazy business happen. I made a little video, put it out there on the Instagram and the Facebook. I was working on my Gibson Les Paul special double cutaway. I'm glad there's no more names associated with that. It's quite a mouthful. But I love that guitar, and I was getting ready to do a recording of so it came stock with P100s, and P100s are essentially, they look like P90s if you're just looking at the guitar, but essentially it's a stacked humbucker, and for my band use, I didn't need another humbucker guitar. I wanted a P90 guitar. So I said, you know what? Where I'm going to put new P90s in here, put Jared's vintage style P90s. We're going to do a custom wind on it. So we're going to do the whole story of winding them all up, and I get to help. So that'll be really fun. But I wanted to make sure that we did a one-to-one comparison recording and share it out on Instagram. So, like, here's what this guitar sounds like with the P100s, which most people, if they haven't opened them up and don't know that they're P100s, they probably don't know that they have P100s. So I wanted to do a comparison of that between some vintage-style P90s and just show the difference. And as I was about to do that... I heard this incredibly wild just howl from my guitar. I was like, what the heck is this? And the pickup had actually just like popped up and was smacked up against the strings. And being as that I was running through a Devyever fuzz, which is really mean sounding, it was a little, alarming to say.
Well, it didn't just do that on its own like a jack in the box. You like did you bump it or did it fall over?
I might have accidentally bumped it.
Something.
Yeah, I might have accidentally bumped it to where it fell down on the ground.
Does that one have inserts, threaded inserts, or is it?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, so we pulled it up and it has I guess it'd be called bushings, yeah?
Like
yeah.
Little brass bushings.
Yeah, brass bushings that are set into the actual body.
Okay. Yeah.
So the screws can go up, but those bushings were attached to the screws.
Oh.
So they had.
So the bushings came out of the wood.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
No problem.
Yeah, so when we went down to my friend Chase of Chasing Vintage Guitars and went down to his shop, and he set them back in there with some awesome gluey stuff, and now it's good as new. We're going to do a recording, but then we're still going to replace those things.
Yay!
That good was
choice.
My week.
That's a good choice.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of the P100.
Yeah, they're kind of dark. They're a little too dark for
like
my taste. Yeah. Well, they're just kind of dark anyway. To me, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have to go with a noiseless P90, I like the Fralin P90s.
Yeah.
His design is basically two coils on their sides facing the pole pieces.
In my opinion, he's probably one of the best P90 creative guys as far as a pickup guy.
I would agree.
You know.
Shout out to Lindy.
As far as... you know, noiseless and all that kind of thing.
Well, his regular P90s are nice, but if I have a lot of the noiseless.
They are nice.
They're nice. They're so nice. They're nice. But on a couple of my juniors and things, I put them in because it's one pickup, so you can't get that, you know, middle position hum canceling. So they work really well for that.
So nice.
It's nice.
It's nice. All righty.
You don't care about my week, apparently.
Well, all right, fine.
So let's just say you're sitting out there. All right. Let me talk about my week. In addition to fending off all of the stainless steel fret fans out there.
Right.
you got like rolled on.
Lambasted, you might say. Well, that's okay. And
yeah,
as
was
I
good.
Said.
It was a good conversation.
It was. And it's
and we
good.
Can thank Florian from Millimetrics for
yeah,
starting
Florian,
that.
Florian. No, and
he's French.
Florian drives a DeLorean.
What the hell?
But I totally appreciate the fact that people have very strong opinions in some cases, and I think it's good. And it was an excellent conversation starter.
Yeah.
And I think even when we were talking about when we were recording that episode, I said, you know, we're going to get some pushback on certain things, and you know, when it comes to necks and frets and wood and finish and. You name
all
it.
All those things.
People Everybody, like what they like. I mean, that's
and
just
people
the
like
way
what
is.
They like. And I totally agree with most of the people out there that said that they just love the life that they get out of their frets with stainless steel. But I still stand by my opinion that they're harder to work with. Most techs don't like working with them because they chew up tools. And so I'm going to stick to my guns, but I respect everyone's right to choose whatever frets they want.
Amen.
All right.
This is America.
That was your week?
No, well, that was part of my week. But okay. I did want to bring up, this just actually came in today. And a lot of times I have customers say, hey, I want an anodized guard for my...
You're roaming on the mic, my friend.
Roaming on the mic.
Yes.
I like it.
But it's kind of a phase. It's a new phase effect that I'm working on.
Yeah, it's terrible.
All right, he hates it. But anyhow, so there's a company called Tone Guard that I've oftentimes referred people to. They're the only company that I know of that does aluminum anodized guards. Not something that I do, but I always refer people on if they have something odd.
What are they called again?
They are called Tone Guard.
Not Tony Guard.
T-O-N-E-G-U-A-R-D. I don't have the capacity to work with metals. It's a different set of tooling. And then the anodizing process itself is something that I just don't delve into. But the good news is...
So just for our listeners' purpose, if you're wondering, like, if you're not familiar with what anodizing is or anything like that, think of the J. Mascus model Squire.
Yeah, that's a good example.
It's like... It's you know, sort of a colored aluminum,
gold color aluminum.
Yeah,
old 50s P base. Think
or bicycle parts.
Or bicycle parts.
Yeah, or
Kelphalon cookware.
Yeah, there's many things. My wife actually works for a company that anodizes aluminum. Anyway, okay.
So the good news
this
is...
This isn't the anodized podcast.
You're talking about anodizing.
Go ahead.
So the good news is I received an email. In addition to making my own guards, I am a WD as well as All Parts dealer. And
WD?
WD Music.
Okay.
Just started stocking... for a couple of models. I think they have a couple of Strats, a couple of Tellys, an Esquire, and a Jazzmaster Guard, which I wanted to pick up. And the nice thing about the Jazzmaster Guard is it is drilled to fit a U.S. vintage reissue Jazzmaster, which is kind of a good standard. And so I picked one up. One, I wanted to check the quality. And two, at some point, excuse me, I'm going to assemble kind of a 50s-style Jazzmaster with an anodized guard. So, long story short, it came in today. I'm really pleased with it. It has the true vintage, probably 50s Fender gold anodized look, which is a little bit different if you've seen, like, the J-Mascus Squire model. That tends to be a little more orangey-yellowy, warmer color. This one is more the traditional, you know, kind of a...
It's
a silvery gold almost.
Yeah, it's just less in your face gold.
Yeah. So,
like an antique gold, that's the difference.
So, if you know of a WD dealer, or you can deal with WD direct, or if you go to my website, pickguardian.com, drop me a line and I'll cut you a special deal because being a WD parts dealer, I can work it out for you.
Now, are you limited to custom color? Are you limited to custom colors? That's ridiculous.
Yes.
Are you?
Gold. Can have any color you want as long as it's gold.
Right. Is there like a set of colors or is it just any color you want?
No, just gold anodized.
Just gold.
Yeah. Now, I think if you were to contact ToneGuard, that's ToneGuard.com, they may have some other color options because anodizing can be done in just about any
color. I would love to get a plaid one.
I don't know that you could do a design like that, but you could do solid colors.
Okay.
And it does have a momentary switch on it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
inside joke.
Yeah, inside joke. I like momentary switches.
So that's my week so far.
Okay. That's a lot. That's a lot of week.
That's a lot of week. A lot of stainless lovers out there.
Yeah.
I do like stainless steel screws and bolts on my guitars.
Okay.
So I'm not totally put off by stainless.
Yeah.
DeLoreans are stainless steel.
They are. Ah, thus, that's why Florian drives a DeLorean.
Okay. Full circle.
One, two, three, four on the floor.
Okay. Rick, give it to us.
Yeah, so, four on the floor, you know, I just have to say that my first one would be the Tonal Recall because I love delay. I love what Joel's been doing with all of his stuff at Chase Bliss because it's just been, I feel like, putting us all other guys to shame. It's so brilliant. And that thing's so fun to play with. So I definitely always keep that one on my board. I love the Cali 76.
Well, the Tonal Recall, he's famous for one knob pedals, right?
Yeah. No, he makes
simplicity
the
rules.
Stuff where, yeah, just one sound. You know, it automatically sounds. Yeah.
What now? Let me ask you: was that your first Chase Bliss pedal?
No, I got the Wham Tone before that one.
Okay.
And so I was checking that one out. He's such a cool guy. I bought the Tonal Recall. I snuck in on his website and bought it actually because we talk every once in a while, and he turned around and ordered the same amount of money, or you know, of pedals off of my website.
Yeah.
So he basically hooked me up with it for free.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's such a nice guy. So I had the Wham Tone first, and then I got the Tonal Recall just because I'm crazy about delays.
So when you're using a Tonal Recall, okay, obviously that has a lot of options. A
lot of options, yeah.
How do you use it? Tell us about it.
You know, I haven't fully gotten, like a good MIDI setup for it. So I keep usually pretty simple. I have one that is a one setting saved that's a short delay with a lot of feedback. So you just get this stuttering, ethereal ambient sound. Then I just have like my standard kind of tape-ish delay where you got a little bit of warble to it.
Yeah, I like that.
I usually use that for like...
death metal?
Swells. Yeah, oh. Death metal. Yeah. It works perfect for it, you know? Yeah. That death sound. And then I have one that's a little bit more percussive, great for like dotted eighth note type stuff.
Do you play with the dip switches at all?
Yes. There was a time.
Okay.
Yeah, I more so like dug in super deep when I first got it, and then I've just been happy with how I've had it set up since. So I don't mess with stuff too often.
Gotcha. Okay, cool, man.
Good first choice.
Yeah. What's right? Next?
Yeah. So next is Cali 76. Mm. I love that compressor. Got the big transformer version. And that thing just adds a lot of warmth and depth to your tone. I'm a compressor on all the time type of guy, generally speaking. So that thing, man, is just such a awesome tool to have on your board. I usually run it, just some slight compression, gives you that little bit more, percussion and, kind of evens out all your notes.
Right. So is that, do you have other pedals, from Origin or?
No, that's the only thing I have from them. And I'm pretty sure they only make compressors. So they have a couple different, you know, versions. They have the slide rig, which was kind of designed for slide players. They have their new, well, see, they discontinued their transformer versions. So they actually don't make those anymore. And, they got their compact series, which is a, right. You know, silicon version of the input and output buffers, which are supposed to be great. I haven't gotten to try one out yet, but, they're supposed to also be awesome and save you a lot of room. Cause the big Cali 76 are huge because of those, the big transformers that they have in them.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten to try out any of their other stuff, but I got that thing in, it blew me away compared to the other compressors that I had at the time.
So what about that? Cause I mean, if we're talking about compressors, obviously you can geek out about the littlest things on any pedal. When it comes to compressors, I mean, to a certain degree, I think people view them still as utility pedals. So they're not buying it for like the magic that it has, you know, necessarily from a sound output kind of thing. I mean, yes, it does affect the output, obviously, but it's not doing some wacky thing that you can only get with that pedal. Compressor pedals typically don't have extra buttons on them. They've got the pedals that control compression for the most part. So what about the Cali 76 is making you stick with it?
I think for me, the big difference was the transformers. Cause even if you're rolling off the compression, the transformers alone add a lot of warmth and life to your tone.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So they add a nice color that you're not getting without those transformers. And like I said, they have the compact version now, which is, I mean, obviously I don't know the exact circuit, but you know, they moved to a silicon, based or, you know, a solid state version instead of using transformers so they could get it smaller. But,
so you have the big one with the big black knobs on it then, right? Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah. And it's huge. I mean, it's bigger. It's like bigger than a Strymon pedal, you know, so it's got, takes up a lot of space on your board.
Right.
But it's only, you know, it's very simple. It's got three controls on, I think. And then it's got your meter on it. So you can tell how much compression and how hot a signal.
That is cool. I like that meter on that pedal for sure. Now there are a handful of different ones with, you know, subtle differences. There's one with a 60s style, FET compressor. There's the, there's the analog FET. There's, a whole bunch of different ones of that model. Do you know which one you have for the audience?
Oh man, I'm not sure actually. I snagged the maroon kind of like limited edition run they did as when they announced that they were stopping making the transformer version.
Right.
So they came out with this batch of maroon ones, which I believe was just the standard Cali 76. But yeah, they do have some different special versions.
That's that right. It's the Cali 76 standard limited edition reissue.
Yeah.
With the maroon graphics. Just so everybody, if they're looking for it, if they're at the computer or whatever and they're looking for it, that's which one it is.
And it's great because it's got really low noise. I mean, that's a big thing for me with compressors is I hate getting a compressor and it just being really noisy because it's not very usable. It's interesting because this one is based off of a studio compressor. It's a studio compressor that they redesigned to be more geared specifically for guitar. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's the 1176 studio compressor that they modeled it after, basically.
Interesting.
So you said you use compressors pretty much all the time. Have you tried other brands models?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've done the Dynacomp. I've done the Walrus Deep 6, I believe it is. I've got the Petty Drive compressor right now also, which I do like. It's a good compressor also. Oh, man. I've tried a couple more. But, yeah, I used to really love the Dynacomp.
Yeah, MXR,
and which is a great, you know, standard compressor. Even if you don't use it all the time, you just want to add, you know, some compression to your board. That's a great option. And I feel like compressor is one of those things that I've been super into, but I still don't. I'm not like an expert on compression, you know, the whole topic. So I'm super particular without even necessarily knowing what I like or dislike. It's just like I can play it and be like, I don't like the circuit.
Yeah, right. You know it when you hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Compression is one of those unique things for me that I've never gotten super deep into the circuits. I've built them before, but I've never gotten super deep into them. So it's one of those things where I'm like, I like it or I don't like it.
Yeah. I play a lot of Rickenbackers. And so I use the Jangle Box quite a bit. One of the old ones. And that's, I mean, it really does bring a Rickenbacker to life. I mean, that's a great pedal.
A good compression pedal can bring so much dynamic and life to your tone that you, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, I won't make comparisons, but it's kind of like one of those things where you don't realize what you're missing until you've experienced it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's weird because I think people are compression users or they're not.
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing. They either like it or they don't like it. And sometimes it's because compression can get really complicated and they don't know how to dial in a good compression tone.
Yeah.
I think that's a big problem, is just a general, you know, understanding of how compression works on guitar. And then some people just don't, it's just not their thing, which is cool.
Yeah. We did an episode on compression called Compression 101. It was one of the earlier episodes, actually. And it still is one of the most downloaded ones. And I'm sure that we didn't cover off everything, but we had a guy who basically, he's a mastering engineer by trade. So he definitely knows compression, and he dropped a lot of knowledge on us for sure. So if you want to listen to more about compression, go check out our website and you can find that episode. All right. Number three, what do you got?
Which episode is that? Which number?
Oh my gosh. I knew you were going to ask me that.
30 something. I'm going to guess it's like 30 something.
No.
Yeah. 40 something.
No.
20 something.
Are we taking bets?
Is that what we're doing?
It was shortly after my episodes, actually. After the pickup episodes.
It's an early one.
Yeah. It's after the pickup episodes, I know that.
What number was that?
I don't remember.
No, it isn't.
I'm going to say 21.
That's
a good number.
It is number 22.
Oh!
No, just kidding. It wasn't 22. It was number 29.
Okay.
Yeah. They were great episodes. Chris Graham.
It was actually right after you, so no, just kidding, too. Anyways, okay, number three, anyways.
Oh, yeah, number three. I'm going to go with the Boss ES8 just because it's kind of like a foundation thing for me where I just love doing – I love the freedom to do a lot of different routing and order switching and doing polarity, parallel or
parallelity.
Yeah, parallelity or in series. You know, you can change a lot of stuff just by going into the menu and not having to actually rewire my entire board, which is really nice.
Right. That's a new pedal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it came out about 2 years now.
So by new, I mean old. Well, I know. I know they just released a new one. Trying to remember which number.
Yeah,
it is.
They have the one that has the built-in effects.
Yes,
and I forget what that one's called. It's something five though. I think it's letters and then five. Something.
Yeah,
ES5.
I don't think it's the ES5 because the ES5 is the five switch true bypass looper.
Mm.
But this one, yeah, it's like it's two letters and then it's five or something like that. And it's a true bypass looper, but it also has built-in effects, which is a cool concept.
Yeah. But let's talk about yours.
Yeah. You know, if you're into that type of thing, then it's cool, I guess.
Yeah. We need to do an episode actually on switchers because that's another one of the – I like tackling the dark arts of guitar stuff, you know, the voodoo stuff.
It's a deep cavern that you can get really lost in when you start adding MIDI and presets and all the different stuff you can do. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So how did you get into this particular one? Tell us why you stuck with this one.
Well, I'd always done, you know, true bypass loopers I made myself, and I made a digital one, but there was just a lot of extra functionality on this one that I was just kind of being lazy. I didn't really want to do all the programming and because I'm very much – I build what I like.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's very few things from other brands that I consistently use just because I know the sound I want and I just make it for myself type of thing. But there were so many extra features in this one that I just didn't want to spend the time and or have the time to try to figure out and program and all that stuff. So all the extra functionality of changing the order of the loops digitally, and by digitally, I just mean digitally controlled. It's all analog. But being able to control that and put two different loops in parallel, which is really cool when you start doing with like overdrives and fuzz, you can put them in parallel and then they get mixed back together.
Mm-hmm.
Controls over your mix gain on the output and the input on those loops. The MIDI functionality, tap control, all the extra stuff you can program into it. There's just a ton of stuff. And then I also wanted something because my pedals, especially my newer ones, have a alt out jack. So I wanted something that people either were buying or already had that I could be like, hey, you can use this and it can control our pedals and change states and do these different things. Mm-hmm. So it was half and half, kind of that type of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
All righty. Let's have number four.
Number four, I'm going to cheat and go with another delay. I'm going to go with the Electro-Harmonix Memory Man.
Really?
And it's just hard to pick because I like running multiple delays.
Uh-huh.
And although the Tonal Recall isn't based on the DM2, for me, it's closer to the DM2 than the Memory Man. So I like to have another delay, and the Memory Man just has such a unique sound compared to the other ones like the 89 and the DM2 and I can't even pick a specific one. I just got a 70s basic one, there was a time where I basically got to go crazy. Josh Scott at JHS was really kind and let early on and when I had started the company, let me fly out and kind of do a tour of their shop and ask a ton of questions and get ideas on how to do production and all this different stuff.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, super nice. And he's always been really nice. Always answers my questions, always available for advice and stuff like that. But he had a meeting or something where he was like, hey, you know, can you entertain yourself for a little while in the guitar room? And I was like, sure.
No.
Yeah, right. And I swear he has the most amazing pedal collection that's inspired my collecting ever since. But I swear he has every model of the Memory Man.
Yeah.
So I basically
grabbed. That's a beloved pedal, man.
Yeah, and I basically got to grab like 20 of them and just hook them all up and wow. just compare one. Wow. Yeah, and go through all the different nuances and different sounds and.
So you have an old 70s one. What do you, can you put your finger on what the nuance or sound that you like from that?
You know, it just has to do with comparatively, it has to do with the filtering that's in the feedback loop. I think for me, compared to the DM2 and those other ones, the dark tone that you get out of it is very unique for me. Like that's what I love is that dark analog tone. And for me, the Memory Man is like the epitome of that dark analog repeat. So you just get this warm, washy sound. So I love using that one for like swells and like deep ambience or getting loops going, mm-hmm. Creating soundscapes. That one's really cool because you just have this really warm,
all the stuff Joe Bonamassa likes.
Yeah, exactly.
Tony's been waiting to get that in there.
It's perfect for that or for death metal. Like
yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, or the blues.
Or the blues.
Cool, man. Well, that's a great collection. I like that you pulled out, like, kind of an oldie. And there's something just so cool about, like, you know, whenever we go to shows, guitar shows mm-hmm. and stuff, I mean, those are the ones that I always end up kind of like picking up and handling, and the old Maestros and just like,
oh yeah, those are cool. Yeah,
the old ones, the old
electroharmonics. Yeah, they just look cool.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they look cool, and then also just vintage gear in general just has like so much story behind them, and it's like, where has this been? You could tell it's been in dive bars, and someone spilled a beer on this one, and
it's got a little dent on the side.
Yeah, and so I'm all about collecting the vintage stuff. I don't buy too much of the newer, except I love supporting like my friends' companies and stuff like that, which everyone else in the industry. But yeah. I really for the vintage stuff. That's where my heart's at.
Nice.
Yeah, that also gets you out of buying other people's stuff because exactly. you feel like you have to. Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. I love doing this part of the show, and I'm glad when other people.
And it's really interesting to hear especially when we have pedal builders as guests to see what they pick.
Yeah, for sure.
It kind of gives you a little insight into the inner darkness.
Yeah, it isn't always about the biggest, baddest, newest thing with the most buttons and it isn't. It's. So anyways, cool. Well, hey, thanks. This has been great. We'll wrap it up. No, no, you are here for a reason, and that reason is to tell us about your personal pedal gig that you do. You have a company called Matthews Effects, and you hand build some pedals on a lot of them, and some really, really great sounding, very cool ones. Can you just maybe start off by just telling us at what point did you say, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, I think it just all started around my deep, deep love for stainless steel frets.
And, excellent, and Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah. All the jokes are on the table now.
I just had to throw that in there.
Nice.
Yeah, right. No, it was one of those things that honestly just kind of fell into. Like anyone else, I grew up wanting to play guitar because I saw Back to the Future.
Yes.
And I wanted to be, play Johnny B. Goode.
Sure.
I think there was a DeLorean in that movie, wasn't there?
Oh, my gosh.
It all comes full circle.
Yep. It's all connected. Yeah. So growing up playing in bands and doing different stuff like that, I was so super obsessed with gear and everything that I was playing. Even back then, I had huge pedal boards, and I loved pedals. I loved pedals. And I didn't know what I wanted to do exactly, whether it was amps or pedals or something, but I just knew I wanted to be part of the industry. But I knew absolutely nothing. And I originally started the company doing like tap tempo switches and stuff like that. Mm. And I did it for like a month. And at the time, like, didn't know how to make a website. Like, it was all very bad, but it was a great learning experience. I think I sold like one pedal. And so fast forward like 2 or 3 months, a company moved to town called BYOC, buildyourownclone.com. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. Oh, yeah. They're very big in the DIY community, make some great products. Well, they were hiring. So I was like, hey, I'll throw it out there, see what happens. I ended up not getting the job, which was super sad. But a year later, they were hiring again and they brought me on. And so I was super, super lucky. Keith, the owner, mentored me, taught me a ton of stuff about guitar pedals. And I loved working there. It was a great place, but I didn't really have any like creative freedom. And so I was like, hey, you know, do you mind if I start kind of doing my own thing on the side? And he was like, sure, go for it. So I started the company. And this time I had learned about Instagram and, you know, using Facebook and all this stuff and how to right. properly create a website. And so this time stuff kind of blew up and stuff started selling. And, you know, I paid for like the parts for the first two pedals. And we did things slow. So those first couple pedals paid for the next couple pedals, and those pedals mm-hmm. paid for the next batch, and so on and so on and so on. And so, although it's been, you know, 5 years and we've been slowly building, slowly progressing, you know, it's great because we haven't, you know, had to do any like huge loans or anything. We fully own the company. We built out a shop in my backyard on our property, that we all work in, which is great. So it's kind of like a close-knit family type company. Mm-hmm. And you know, I got multiple employees now, which has been super awesome and fun. And so it's been a long road. It's been pretty crazy. The kind of what really separates my experience, I think, from a lot of other builders is the first month that I started the company, I was diagnosed with this autoimmune disease that came out of nowhere, you know, like no notice, no nothing. And so it was cool because with the company, I could work from home. I could kind of do my own thing. But I had to build this company while also fighting this, you know, incredibly debilitating disease, which has been a crazy journey. It's been wow. a lot. It's been interesting is the nice way of putting it. But
and just for the record, for those who are listening, at this point, if you're listening to them in chronological order, you will have heard the episode with Lollygagger, in which we talk about the state of guitar. And that Sean pinch-hit it for us because we originally had this episode scheduled with Rick at that time, but he fell very ill very quickly and wasn't able to do the episode. And quite frankly, I'm surprised but very happy that you were able to reschedule as soon as you did. So glad that you're doing better.
Yeah, and it worked out good because I'm having a major surgery in 3 weeks. Oh, so everything should go well.
Well,
and
calf
everything,
implants aren't major surgery. Let's just, I mean, come on now.
I'm getting stainless steel frets installed.
Nice.
So yeah, no, it's been quite the fight, but I'm really proud of what we've been able to do with our products. My design philosophy, and this is also why we've never done like a compressor, is if I'm going to release a product, it should be something that is unique or does something different than what's already out on the market. Right. 'Cause I don't want to be building, you know, clones. I don't want to be building the exact same stuff in the exact same way other people are doing. From a business standpoint, it just doesn't make sense. And then also just from, you know, my philosophy, I want to be contributing to the community, not just a fly on the wall or, you know, make a quick buck here and there. And then, you know, the company disappears in a year or two. So and that really kind of started with the conductor and the astronomer, which is kind of if you've seen our pedals, they're a little mm-hmm. different. You know, our bypass foot switch is offset to the left. And, you know, our second switch on like the astronomer is set, you know, up towards the top of the pedal kind of midway, which is kind of, you know, different than what's out on the market. And when I was doing it, I was like, this is either a really good idea or it's a really bad idea. I don't know if people will like this or not. But, you know, we launched the astronomer and that really has become kind of the flagship of our company. It's really taken off for us. A ton of people have started playing it and enjoying it. So it's been it's been fun.
Yeah, and you just came out with a series of hand-painted astronomers.
Yeah, we did some hand paints last year with a really talented local artist. And so she did them last year, and they were really great. People loved them, and ever since, people have been asking for more. So we just did one a day for the last 10 days. We were releasing one a day.
Yeah.
We were able to catch her. She goes to school in London, which is like crazy, and so she always flies back for a couple of weeks to see family and stuff. So we're gonna try to catch her every time she comes back to do some more hand paints.
That's cool. They're really
great looking petals too.
And that's one of the great things about petals is that there's the collectability of them is just there's such a high factor for it in just little ways. And I love when a company will decide to do something just like that. Like, hey, look, we're not mm-hmm. we don't have to come up with an entire new line to do this, but like just every so often you just do, you know, I mean, ZVEX obviously built an empire around that.
Yeah, they pioneered that. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. You started off with your astronomer and the architect, and where is it going? Where did it just really start to blossom from there? Like what? There's usually a tipping point in which you like go like this, and then blammo.
Yeah. So I mean, we had multiple products before those, and we were a company for about 2 years, 2.5 years or something like that before we came out with the astronomer. The astronomer was really the tipping point for us, because before that it was like we were selling units, but it wasn't enough to pay, like, you know, doing it full time, or let alone to pay someone else to do it or be a part of the company. And then we came out with the astronomer, and I think just the wow factor, the uniqueness of it, and how different it was from all the other shimmer reverbs on the market really allowed it to blossom, because it fit a niche in the market that wasn't being tapped. And so and basically what I mean by that is the astronomer is a 3-knob pedal, but it's got 6 knobs. And so what's unique about that is it's the same controls basically twice, and you can switch between the different rows, kind of like an analog version of a preset. And so having something that you don't have to dive into menus or read, you know, this thick manual to be able to understand, it's super intuitive. You can see the knobs, you can change them on the fly, you can jump between them on the fly. It's really easy, you know, really resonated with a lot of players. And so that was the tipping point for us, where we just started. I don't think we've ever been ahead in producing them. We've always been catching up.
That's awesome.
So we've been super lucky with that.
One thing that you mentioned was, you know, obviously, and I applaud this effort. I think there's a lot of builders out there right now who have the same sort of methodology. I mean, you know, Mike from the show, Mike Trombley of Red House, he's got the same mm-hmm. thing. Like, I'm not going to put something out unless it hasn't been put out before. For the most part, I think that's, you know, what he's been doing. And now, with that philosophy in mind, which is a great one, you have 4.5 overdrives, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So how hard – tell us about, like, you know, with that philosophy, but you have multiple overdrives, which is arguably, you know, the most crowded market for pedals. How did you wiggle your way into that with this philosophy?
Yeah, so, I mean, for instance, let's start with the Architect. So the Architect is a Klon-based circuit. And so we took that and we wanted to do some unique things with it, or at least do things that weren't already being done in the market with it. And so we, as far as I know, I don't want to say for sure, because, you know, you can always be wrong. Mm-hmm. But I'm fairly certain we were the first one to do a full 3-band EQ on a Klon circuit,
gotcha.
Which to me seems no brainer, because the people who either like or dislike a Klon circuit, it revolves around the mid response. And so having full control over that seems like a no-brainer. We also added some different clipping options and just giving you some variety with the circuit. And then so and then we have other examples like the Cartographer. And so what it is it's a parametric overdrive. And it's heavily inspired by an overdrive from the 80s. But nobody's really doing parametric EQ with guitars. You know, parametric EQ is like a standard thing in mixing or pro audio.
Right.
But it's not something.
Tell us a little bit about the parametric EQ real quick for the listeners who don't know.
Sure. Yeah. So parametric EQ. So your sound, right? You have a spectrum of frequencies from zero, you know, to whatever. And guitar falls into this certain, I forget the actual top frequency that guitar falls under. But in normal EQ, so let's say a treble or a mid or a bass, only lets you adjust these certain frequencies in that spectrum. And it's multiple frequencies and you're either boosting or cutting them.
Right.
And what a parametric EQ does is it lets you sweep through those frequencies so you can pick any frequency and you can either boost or cut those frequencies. And so what that lets you do is adjust your tone and your sound in a very precision way. You know, if you're playing, I love it for multiple guitars because, you know, one guitar might be a little trebly on your amp, whereas your other guitar, you know, like to say, let's go in between a Tele and a Les Paul.
Yeah.
Your Les Paul is a lot more boomy. Let's say you're switching to your Tele, but you don't want to switch up your amp or anything. Having this where you can just click that on and adjust those specific frequencies.
Yeah.
So being able to adjust, you know, a specific frequency instead of a group of frequencies lets you dial out annoying buzzes or sounds without compromising your overall treble, mids, or lows.
Right.
Yeah, I think you see a lot of the parametric stuff on like acoustic guitar preamps, yep, and things like that.
Yep.
Dial, yeah, out those, yeah, howling frequencies.
Yeah, or exactly, yeah, or just on alternative, just parametric EQ pedals. There's not a lot of them out there. There's only a couple, but if you still don't know what we're talking about, think GarageBand or Logic. Think about the EQ tool in that. In which you can, get very narrow on your frequency or spread it wide, as opposed to just taking a handful of, you know, taking one and getting bleed from either or, like on a standard slider EQ compact pedal. Mm-hmm. But, the idea of working that into an overdrive is really, really great.
And what's interesting about how it works is traditionally in like an overdrive pedal, you have the overdrive section and then you have the EQ section. Mm-hmm. And on this one, the EQ actually happens before the overdrive. So you're driving different frequencies. You know, you're not just affecting the sound post overdrive.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad I thought of that.
Yeah, which really changes up the character.
I'm patenting that right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it gives you a very unique experience compared to, you know, between the EQ and then how the drive works. A very unique experience compared to just your normal overdrive.
Sure. And how about the Gatsby?
So the Gatsby, that's just an alternate art of the Architect version 2.
Gotcha.
So we just did, an alternate art version. We do have the Wailer Fuzz.
Yes.
Which you can get some amazing overdrive tones out of, like pushed vintage amp overdrive tones, or some great fuzz. It's actually an original fuzz circuit, which is hard to say these days because most everything is based off something.
I'm going to have to try that one.
But, yeah, that's one. That's like our secret gem. Like I said, the Astronomer is what really took off for us. So we're most known to people for reverbs.
Right.
But man, that Wailer is at shows, you know, where people get to try stuff out in person.
Yeah.
People go crazy for that Wailer, which is fun.
Are you trying to tease me right now? Cause you know, I like fuzz or what?
I'm trying to entice you. You know?
Yeah. I'm going to have to try that thing out. You were wise to say, all right, these should have very specific things tonally or effect wise. You know, there's a continuity to it. There's a continuity in your artwork, and as well as the you have interesting names for the pedals. Where did that all stem from?
Yeah, you know, that came from mainly from back when, because I haven't been doing it too much the last couple of years being busy, but being in bands and writing lyrics and stuff like that, I was always conceptual. And so when I did the products, I wanted the products to inspire you both with the sounds you got out of them, but I also wanted them to kind of be inspiring with the names and the concepts. You know, there's just certain words that invoke images in your head, you know, so like a whaler, for me, I just think of, you know, these big ships and stormy weather. And then I think of all the songs that revolve around the ocean and stuff like that. So, that's kind of our standard, is every single pedal is like a profession or a,
occupation
or a name, you know, like we used to have a pedal called the Scoundrel. So, you know, basically, names or titles and stuff like that, basically stuff that invokes you.
How about the Pick Guard Maker?
Yeah, exactly. you know exactly what they're talking about.
The Pickup Maker.
Winder. The Winder.
The Winder.
Oh, that's not a bad name for a pedal. That is pretty
good. The Delay Maker.
It's not a good one either.
Yeah. It's an awesome one. That's what it is.
That's what I feel like I missed out, you know, because I could have just added everything with Maker at the end, you know, Overdrive Maker, Delay Maker.
You see, you should have consulted us.
Widowmaker.
I should have, yeah.
So, Rick, you came up right at the absolute, some might say the sweet spot, the early curve, but not too early. Because there was a lot of people that were just a little bit too early that kind of it never caught.
Yeah.
But you happened at pretty perfect timing in the pedal world.
Sorry, go ahead.
As you did that, and as you are sitting in it right now currently, I would love to know what your thoughts are as far as a person like yours' role in the pedal world, where you see some good things or some bad things, where it's going. Like, let us in on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fickle market, you know. It's a constantly changing market with people constantly changing their taste and whether they're pro stainless steel frets or against stainless steel frets. It's constantly changing, you know. So I think I think one of the toughest parts about being in this business is just lasting, you know. A lot of companies, either the owners lose interest or they hit a rough time and they can't, you know, stay around through that rough time to come out with new stuff. It's tough. I think it's also really important to be listening to the community and what they want. I try to be really flexible on, okay, you know, like this pedal isn't resonating with people. You know, let's do something different. Let's pull it away. Let's focus on this. And so I think a big problem people run into with the industry is either not listening or feeling like they've gotten to the place where they know everything. So like my biggest thing is anytime I'm at a show or I get a meet up with other business owners, I'm constantly like asking them questions. All right, what are you guys doing that's working? Or, you know, what do you feel like your secret to success is? How can I learn from what you guys are doing instead of just doing what I think is best in the market? Because otherwise you just get in this bubble and you just keep making the same stuff and you don't progress or move on at all.
Well, that's an interesting thing to consider, because I think most people would think that pedal builders, especially pedal builders, because there are so many brands and so many pedals out there, that it would be a very competitive kind of like, don't share your secrets, you know, we're not, but it seems to be a very, very open and friendly industry, which helps rising tide raises all ships. So if everybody helps everybody be better, then there's going to be more better pedals and people are going to want them more and they're going to build more.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting industry to be in, because coming into it, yeah, I expected it's cutthroat, you know, you're lucky if anyone will give you a nod in the hallway or something, you know, but it has been so open and so welcoming, which I think is a big part to kind of the elders in the industry. People like John Cusack and Robert Keeley and Josh Scott, all these guys have been super influential in how I do things, and always so open, always so willing to answer questions and give advice and give input, you know, compared to other industries. Yeah, you're on your own and you just have to figure it out or pay someone to figure it out. Or so it's a unique thing. And there's always exceptions, you know, there's always, you know, some bad eggs,
name them people.
We want names.
Well, I have a question for you. Yeah, this is Jared here, in case you forgot. I do every episode. No, I've been looking at your product over the last few days. I noticed there's a Matthews Effects Innovators group on Facebook.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the advantages of having that specific group? And there's close to 500 people in that group.
Yeah, so another part of like my philosophies with business and everything is, as I was saying before, with listening to the market and customers, is being really connected and involved with them. So the innovators group, I also really love puzzles and I love messing with my customers. So we do giveaways and contests in there, and we've done a build party where I did a live video where I built the pedal with you, and beforehand you bought the enclosure and we got you all the parts and everything like that. And then we just did a build party where everybody built the pedal together.
That's
and you could
awesome.
Ask questions.
That's a great idea.
Oh, that's awesome. Next time you do that, will you please make sure to
take Todd off your list?
No, I just joined it actually. No, but to share that, because we'll get it out to ours as well.
Yeah. Well, I just requested to be in that group, by the way. So.
Oh, cool. I'll deny you.
Hey, he's fitting.
Come on,
right,
man!
In.
I use stainless steel frets now. Come on,
that's his.
That's the question. His name. You gotta answer to get into the stainless. Group. How do you feel about stainless steel frets?
Stainless Jared.
No, you'll be really interested, because the last one we did was a boost, a really really simple super hard on bass boost.
Right.
And the next one that we're gonna do is a really simple fuzz.
Oh,
so,
yay!
Nice.
I'm in.
Yeah. So I have my artists do the artwork, and you know, we basically do a professional level enclosure for you. And then you get to have fun, you know, building it. You get to ask questions. And then, you know, if you have any trouble building it, like say post, or you weren't able to finish it or do it during the build party, you have a whole community of people who also built it, or you have the live video, which you can go back and rewatch.
That is such a great idea.
This is the group I was. I mean, this is amazing.
It's really fantastic. Yeah. So let's make sure that we get clear. So if you go to Matthews Effects and you click on community, you will find it. Or you can go to Facebook, Matthews Effects Innovators. And then it's right there. What a fantastic thing.
Yeah, you don't have to go to the instruction book every time. You could just ask somebody else on the community.
Yeah, and then there's tons of people who I'm very lucky that we have really passionate customers who love the products that we make and love talking to other customers about how they use it, or posting videos of them playing with different products. So even if you're like, I don't have any of these products yet, it's a great place to go in and get some feedback and ask questions and stuff like that. Mm. But yeah, I love doing stuff like that, which is perks just for that group. You know, you have to be in the group to get them. When I started the group, you got to sign up for this list, and it wasn't really a list. It was just, if you joined the group, you got to give your address, and we sent out buttons and stickers and stuff like that to everyone who entered it was like the first couple hundred or something like that who entered the group. And so doing just giveaways and stuff like that, where people are connected and get to just have fun with like-minded people is a great way for them to feel like they're a part of the brand and not just a product that they buy. You know, they get to feel like they're
absolutely,
actually
absolutely. We get a lot of comments about brands that do that. We get people, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, hey, Rattlesnake was one of the ones that still mm-hmm. comes up. Hank sends out all kinds of little stuff, and you get, you know, a little pad of paper, and it's like, man, this is cool. You don't have to do this at all. But now I'm in on the brand, not just the product, and. Mm-hmm. Most people, because this is a passion product, it's a passion, it's, you know, a hobby or whatever you want to call it, that we want that, like, in spades. Yeah. It's not like detergent where we have to use it.
Yeah.
Jared, we do have to use that.
thank you.
So, man, that's really cool. I'm so glad that we talked about that. Now, moving forward, the pedal industry.
Yeah.
Give us I know you don't have a crystal ball per se, but maybe that's a new pedal thing. The foreseer, the soothsayer.
Ooh.
Those could work.
Oh, that's a great name for a pedal.
I'm writing that one down.
You can have it.
Soothsayer. Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a fickle market and constantly changing in the directions it can go. The way I see it is you either need to be really adapting to the changes in technology and trying to be a pioneer instead of just a follower mm-hmm. in the market, mm-hmm. or you need to, like, hardcore adhere to traditional vintage rules, right? So you either need to be forging new ground, or you need to be like the one who's like the epitome of vintage styling and vintage parts and quality and how they used to do things. Cause that's basically how the market is split. You have the guys who love and stand by how things used to be done, or the ones who want a product that sounds good and adds all the new features or creates new features that they didn't even know about.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, we were talking about some of the big box stuff, you know, mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people, even like most people that are doing like throwback or vintage style. It's still in mm-hmm. a very modern, you know, we're starting to see a couple different enclosures, a couple of slant boxes and bent slants and stuff. But I'm assuming it's just a cost prohibitive thing to like go back and, you know, kind of redo some of those wonky boxes that, you know, because
I mean, unless you want to buy 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
So you either need to be able to make them yourself or have a local friend, you know, who gives you a really good price on bending the steel and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it costs a little bit more, but also you see the guys who do like the super vintage traditional germanium transistor. Excuse me.
Yeah.
But the way I see it is, I would rather be on the advancing side of it rather than the strictly traditional, because the strictly traditional side, I mean, kind of like you were saying with the enclosures, is only ever going to get more expensive to produce, because like vintage germanium transistors, there's only so many of them playing in existence, right?
Yeah.
I mean, NOS new old stock stuff from the 70s and 80s is only going to last so long.
Yeah.
And the less there is, the more expensive those parts are going to become.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's really going to be interesting to see how the industry changes. I don't know how fast, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but a lot of the traditional parts, you know, like through hole components that builders use mm-hmm. that kind of allowed the smaller DIY community to grow so much are getting discontinued, because basically all other electronic industries revolve around the cell phone and
right.
you know, pro audio, not so much pro audio in the sense of music, but like audio and speakers and cars and stuff like that. Cause all of those are where they're selling millions and millions and millions of stuff. And we just adapt stuff or it's, you know, applicable to us. So as those things are getting discontinued and those companies are all moving to surface mount and, you know, smaller components and stuff like that, that are really either really annoying to do by hand, or you just can't do a batch of 50 pedals by hand in a timely manner with those components, it'll be really interesting to see what happens. Because, I mean, the whole DIY or smaller pedal builders could completely disappear.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see in the next 10, 20 years what the market is actually going to look like as far as pedal builders.
Yeah. That's a really, really interesting point. And certainly the wave of, I mean, I'm one of those people who's like, I got into building them late and I've only done a couple, mm-hmm. but I absolutely love it. I just wish that I had the ability to design the actual, you know, the actual board, you know,
the PCB. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, and I don't mean to actually design the physical board, but design the sound of it, you know, because otherwise just have to get somebody else's thing.
You gotta get a breadboard and just jump into it, man.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I really like it, but, I'm going to do this for a while. I'm going to let you guys make the good stuff. All right, man. Well, hey, I thoroughly enjoy talking to you. I feel like we got a really great insight into the Matthews Effects brand. And I hope everybody who's listening feels that way as well and are intrigued and will go out and check out the Matthews Effects pedals. There are some really great ones out there. Now, why don't we do a little something-something?
How about...
Depends on what that something-something entails.
I'm going to go ahead and suggest we do Would You Rather.
All right.
The Velvet Smog.
Yes. Okay, we've got a very interesting one this time.
All right. For this week's Would You Rather, have a neon modern Les Paul Access Custom made by Gibson? Or would you rather
Floyd Rose?
With a Floyd Rose, that's right, my man. Or would you rather have the Epiphone Flying V with the whole Bixby unit going on?
Okay.
So it's kind of like, you know, kind of like a Jimi Hendrix thing, except for, you know. He played a flying V. Yeah, he sure did.
I guess the question is does the Gibson have robotic tuners on it or not?
We can only hope.
I don't believe it does.
Because if it doesn't, I'd have to go with the Gibson, just because a Bixby on a flying V just looks so wrong.
True, true, true.
Really?
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, you have to just put the little brace across the bottom, yeah. Would you rather?
I'm kind of mowing through my mind what I don't know. I'm going to go with the Gibson. I'm going to go with the new Gibson in hopes that I could probably change some things on it.
Paint it.
With the finish? No. I understand the concept of this game, and I'm going to go with the Gibson all the way.
Well, because then you could sell it. I don't think you could ever sell that Flying V.
You can always change the electronics out, you know, but the Bixby thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to go with the Gibson as well, because there's just not enough neon in this world. That's what the world needs now. Not Love Sweet Love, but it needs more neon.
Yeah.
Hey, Zach, welcome back.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
You have a group that has something to do with Epiphones.
Yeah, I do love Epiphones, especially the older ones. You know, in this case, though, I think I would also have to go with the Gibson, because I'm a fan of neon colors. I like neon.
Absolutely.
Especially under black light.
My room is like a bright neon green, so if I could do like a green screen, and it would look like I'm not even playing the guitar.
Wow.
Yeah. I think most people would like that.
What, him not playing guitar?
Not playing that guitar. You know what? I'm going to go with the Epiphone.
Just to be different.
Well, so Lonnie Mack was like the guy who kind of like... I don't know if he necessarily put that on the map, but certainly he's one of the most known for that. And he was pretty cool. So I'm going to do that. Boy, if we were decided on that. It usually takes a long time.
Yes.
Not divided at all.
No, that's good. All right. We are wrapping up, we have a few things that I just want to call out for everybody. Specifically, the people that are helping us out. And welcome John Daly, a constant contributor to
the
content.
Golfer?
No, to content on our Facebook group.
That's
and
right.
Elsewhere, he's always chiming in and is great. He's got great things to say.
Thanks, John.
So he is now an executive producer. Welcome, my friend. We also have Robin Smith, Derek Fitzer, Pete Marshall, Carlos Mancha, Matt Brammer, David Wolfson, Martin Cliff, and Tom Barazin. If you would like to become an executive producer, head on over to patreon.com/theguitarknobs to find out how. And while you're browsing around on the internet doing awesome things and buying stuff and supporting, where can they find you?
Matthews Effects is at www.matthewseffects.com.
And you got a good Instagram game, so they should check that out too, right?
Definitely, yeah. Instagram, our Facebook group, as we talked about earlier. Yeah, I think that's pretty much the main streams that we post on.
Okay, excellent. Boys, this has been a good one. I like everybody on the line right now.
Absolutely.
Don't mess it up when we get off the line. And subscribe!
Yeah. It's the Gibson.
Hang on, I'm going to pull it up.
Just give me a name so I can just say the name.
It's not that easy, man.
The Neon Modern Les Paul XS Custom Deck.
Yep.
You can remember all that.
You don't have to remember it. It's right in front of you. Your brain just has to say it.
You know, it's got the effects on it.
There's no effects
on it.
Okay. No effects.
All right.
Don't ad lib. Just read.
Okay. Okay. This week's.
Wait. Let's do the clap.
Well, that's it for these knobs. Please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/theguitarknobs. Visit our website at theguitarknobs.com for all of our past episodes, Four on the Floor blog, and other good stuff. You can connect with us on social too at our Facebook page and share your gear and stories on our Facebook group. Also, be sure to check out our Instagram at guitarknobs. Catch you next time.